When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context. Plus, tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
So I'm really happy to have my pal Tyler Smith back on. It's been a long time since we've talked to him. He's a film critic, a college professor in L.A. He's written for a lot of outlets, and he runs a co-host of podcast Battleship Pretension, which recently put out the book, The 101 Best Films of the 2010s. But he's made a documentary called Real Redemption, which is about religion in films. It got a rave review from Christian Toto at Hollywood in Toto. Here is a trailer.
The story of the church's relationship with Hollywood is long, complicated, and even a little melodramatic.
This is my church!
The Bible, of course, is terrific, but for millions of people, pictures will be their reference point for the story.
While faith is a difficult concept to nail down visually, the impact of faith is not.
I want to compare faith to running in a race. It's hard.
To show God is to limit him. So when depicting God, a filmmaker has his work cut out for him.
Yes, why do we have to have evil?
I think it's something to do with free will.
The intersection of faith and film is more active, more aggressive, and more alive than ever before. Why now?
Tyler Smith, it's good to see you. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. Congratulations on that great review from Christian.
Oh, thank you very much.
So
it's actually been reviewed by a number of outlets. Only one had some bad stuff to say about it, which is Movie Guide, which is a Christian outlet. But you know what? Based on other stuff I've seen, I feel like I win.
Yeah, and they have a very narrow point of view. I mean, they want very specific things. And you have always said that just because it's Christian doesn't mean it's good. And apparently in this documentary, put that forward. But Hollywood has always had a kind of tense relationship with religion, right? I mean, this is an actual history.
Yeah, absolutely. The film is split up basically into two halves. The first half is sort of history. And then the second half is, for lack of a better term, analysis. And so it's just talking about tense is a good word for it. The tense, or at least tenuous relationship between Hollywood and the church, which can mean in this case, the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, that sort of thing. And then probably, I mean, honestly, probably around the 1960s or 70s is when it started to kind of split because I don't want to go through the entire history because everything leads to everything else. But essentially, Hollywood, in an attempt to pull people away from television, they made some major stylistic changes, like really embracing color and a different aspect ratio, that kind of thing. But the thing that they realize is like, well, you know what? Like, when it comes to just what we can feature from a content standpoint, we've all just been agreeing not to incorporate sexuality, profanity, stuff like that. Whereas TV is required not to do that. So you know what? Let's just drop this and embrace the rating system and we'll bring people in. And that's absolutely what happened. And then there was really, and the church felt, and of course it's silly to talk about the church as one monolithic thing. So I'm speaking broadly, but like the church felt a little bit betrayed and felt like, well, we've always been sort of catered to. So why aren't you doing it now? And then they say like, well, it's just about money. It's like, well, it's about money to a certain extent, but some filmmakers also really appreciated that level of freedom, like a Martin Scorsese and that sort of thing. So there's so many reasons, but yes, it definitely parted ways probably around the 60s or 70s.
And it does seem to me that at some point Hollywood actually had respect for actual religious content. So Bing Crosby could be a lovable priest, and the pictures about, like, Ben-Hur was a very, very respectful picture about the Christ, where you never see his face, and there was all kinds of religious content which seemed to be made almost by, if not by religious people, at least for religious people.
Because if nothing else, like, Hollywood, and there are multiple reasons, but, like, Hollywood loves spectacle, and hey, the Bible is a big spectacle. So it's like, let's have Ben-Hur, let's have, like, the Ten Commandments and stuff like that, because that gives us the opportunity to, like, really have big movies. And that's another, and even though that goes back to the silent era, like, that's another thing that they have over TV or theater or something like that. But sensibilities shift. And I do think that within Hollywood, I think there was a respect for the audience because there had to be. And then after a certain point, they realized, especially again, like in the 1960s, when they realized, like, we should try to go for a younger audience. I think they sort of opted out of that. And whatever potential hostility was there maybe came a little bit more to the forefront. And that's sort of where it has stayed. And it's mutual. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was looking recently at the number of biblical films that were made right before The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's smash hit.
Yeah.
And there just weren't that many. They had almost stopped making biblical films. What did Gibson's film change?
I mean, it's so much stuff. Like, it's the model, the release model, because he made it independently and he distributed it independently. And of course, independently has to be in quotes because he was extremely wealthy, but he did it independent of major studios. But it's certainly something he could afford. I think it's just what really changed it was there was a lot of the story around the movie, like shopping it to studios and it being rejected and all that sort of thing. And so that really sets up from a marketing standpoint, from a publicity standpoint, it sets up the us versus them. And there's this idea, and it still sticks around a little bit with certain Christian films, this idea of let's show them, you know, let's show them what they're missing and let's embrace these movies. Sometimes they're really slick and really impactful, like The Passion of the Christ. Other times I'll just say less so, but either way, there is that feeling of we need to send them. That's the big thing. We need to send a message to Hollywood that we're an audience that deserves to be considered. And I think the message has mostly been received. Like, you get Sony buying PureFlix, I feel like in the last year, even maybe just a few months ago, and you have more films getting a green light. And then you have a lot of studios sort of having their offshoot, like their faith-based offshoot studios. And so I think it came, like, as the case with anything, I think Hollywood sort of forgot that the faith-based audience is an audience and that they can try to cater to them. Sometimes they do it, sometimes they fail, like with Noah, a movie that I actually thought was pretty good, and Exodus, Gods and Kings, which I was back and forth on. And so, like, there's this, it's been an interesting thing to see in the last 10 to 15 years, like Hollywood trying to cater, not knowing how to cater, and then being like, you know what, these people over here seem to know, so we'll just give them money and they can do it because we're out of ideas.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, I had this funny experience, the God King of the Daily Wire and I, Jeremy Boring, we collaborated on a script about Samson. And Noah came out, and I thought the problem with Noah to me was that God destroyed the world for environmental reasons instead of reasons involving sin. And, you know, with the God and Kings, with the Moses picture, Christian Bale came out and said Moses was a terrorist. When we handed in the script to my agent, he said, this is the best biblical script I've read in 20 years, but biblical scripts don't make money. And I said, well, they don't make money because you offend the people who are coming to see them. And it was almost as if Hollywood wanted to co-opt the Bible. I mean, there is, I guess what I'm trying to get to is, isn't there an actual hostility toward religion and toward the faith-based community at some level of Hollywood?
I would say at various levels, but I don't think it's necessarily universal either. I do think it's there though. And I think, you know, it's probably not a great call. Again, with Noah, visually gorgeous. That sequence in which he's telling, like, the story of the creation, which is just like this long montage. it's some of the most beautiful filmmaking I've ever seen. But at the same time, if you're familiar with Darren Aronofsky, the filmmaker, he'd made like Requiem for a Dream. And, and then he had made, after No, he made Mother with an exclamation point, which is also a fascinating film, but one that is absolutely suspicious. You know what? I won't even say suspicious. It's hostile towards religion.
Yeah.
As audacious as it is. And I do think that, there are people who are genuinely reluctant, if not just straight up stubborn, about not wanting to embrace religion the way so many other, the more like devout people do. Like, yeah, we may put our own spin on it. We can do that. But yeah, we certainly don't want to make something just straightforward. We don't want to make the Ten Commandments. We'll find some other way to come at it because God forbid or not, we have anything in common with this group that we so seldom disagree with on many levels.
So you, one of the things about the people who are making religious pictures, the faith-based pictures, is that they tend to have a certain kind of sameness, a kind of kind of blithe optimism about life. I mean, I saw God is not dead, and a guy gets hit by a car, and they don't even like stop to say, "Gee, that's kind of tragic." It's like, "Oh, he's gone to heaven! Hurrah!"
Yeah, they intersperse his.
Shouldn't you call the widow first?
His death scene. Exactly. Yeah. Incidentally, I wrote for Daily Wire like a year ago. And I wrote a number of articles, and I pitched an article to them of the worst movies of the 2010s because I had done an article of the best. Right. And I cite God's Not Dead as the worst on a number of levels. As a Christian, I'd say it embarrasses me. As a film fan, it infuriates me. But yeah, there is the thing that tends to bother me about Christian film. And in this documentary, I try to be as fair to Christian film as I am able to be. But what bothers me is I don't think anybody's doing it on purpose, but I think it's a dishonesty. I think it's people who say like, hey, we need to sell this. We need to sell Christianity either to people who don't believe it, or we need to affirm the people that do believe it. And anytime you're trying to sell something, you're going to reduce it. You can't help it. And you're going to put as positive a spin on it as possible. And so it's this idea. Now, granted, that character does die and go to heaven, but he's been an atheist all the way through the film, like a very outspoken atheist. So in a way, like, yes, on one hand, it's a victory, but on the other, like it's a triumph for him, but it's also like, ha ha, see, when the chips are down, this hardcore atheist, he's going to agree with us. And it's just that sort of thing. Like and I feel like it's starting to change even in the time since I put this documentary out, where you start to see a little bit more acknowledgement that like, hey, just because you believe this doesn't mean your life is going to go great. Like there's no guarantee of that. The Bible certainly doesn't guarantee it. It simply guarantees you a deeper hope in order to get through that harder stuff. But I feel like a lot of films for a long time were like, well, that's not going to sell. So let's cheer this up a bit.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There was a film that I kind of liked with Leonardo DiCaprio called Revenant. And I thought that was...
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah, deeply religious film. And I wrote about it, and I got lambasted. I mean, for weeks, people were writing me hate mail. How could you call this a religious film with all the violence and language and all this stuff? What do you like in terms of current religious films? Are there films where you say like, yes, that's the direction we should be going?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big fan of Terrence Malick, and I know that a lot of people aren't. He's not a story, even when he has a story to tell, he's not a story guy. Mm-hmm. He's a feeling guy. He's an ethereal guy. And he, whether it be with Tree of Life or most recently, 2019, he made A Hidden Life, which I loved. I absolutely loved it. It's almost 3 hours long. He gives it the epic treatment, even though it is the story of just one guy who refuses to, it's Man for All Seasons-esque in that regard. He refuses to publicly support Hitler, even though there are some religious figures in his town that are good with that. And as a result, he winds up being put in jail and taken away from his family. And it's a visually gorgeous film with wonderful acting. And it really brings up this question, because obviously from a faith standpoint, we're very much in favor of living out our faith publicly. But one thing that is said over and over again to him while he's in jail is, no one is going to know about this. Mm-hmm. No one is going to be inspired by your story because it's not going to get out. And at the time, it didn't get out.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's out now. But so movies like that. And then I also find the movie First Reformed fascinating. It's very complex, as one would expect, because it's written and directed by Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver. And
right.
he wrote Last Temptation of Christ. So like, there is good stuff being made right now that is as complex as it should be. And then I've also been hearing good stuff about Midnight Mass, but I haven't watched it yet. Everyone says that I should watch it, but I haven't gotten a chance to see it.
It's funny. I started and I thought it was going to be, I thought it was going to insult me. And then I started getting calls that, no, it's really good. So I'm going to go back to it and finish it. Tyler Smith, and the film is called Real Redemption. Where can we see it?
It is available on the Faith Life. It's a very small streaming service, the Faith Life TV streaming service. It's $5 a month, but don't tell anybody. You can get 2 weeks free if you want.
Oh, okay.
And then just I know we gotta go, but I will say I actually have another documentary. I feel like you would find it interesting. It's called Valley of the Shadow: The Spiritual Value of Horror.
Oh,
and so
send me a copy. So we'll talk about that.
I absolutely will.
All right, it's great to see you, Tyler. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Andrew.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.